Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and iwbpodcast on social media.
Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast.
Mouse and Weens.
I'm a big sister in San Diego with kids, and I'm married.
And I have no friends. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. I have friends. I just don't have any boyfriends or love. Anyway, Mouse and Weens podcast, you should listen to it.
Yeah,
it's not really depressing.
Fun. We talk about family stories, life and love, and kids, and all the things you're interested in. We promise.
Yay!
Celebrities in Hollywood, too.
Poke your little turtle head out and come listen to us.
Mouse and Weens. Bye.
You got everything?
Mm-hmm.
No coffee.
Wow. I just had a coffee. Hear a little bit of judgment in that. That's cool.
No,
whatever.
Right?
Yep.
Oh no, you're not taking a drug.
Oh no. Now you'll be slow and sleepy.
We're
now. I might get a word in.
Do See? I not give you a word?
No. No, you. I'm saying that as you.
Oh. I don't think that's true.
I'm not talking so fast that you can't talk.
Yes, you're Speedy Gonzalez.
I'm an auctioneer. I'd do an auctioneer impression, but I can't.
Not much of an auctioneer, then.
No, I'm not. Can't sell anything.
Going once, going twice. You gotta be like twice as fast as that.
But if you would like to buy some art at very reasonable prices, philrude.com.
That's right. If you can do an auctioneer impression.
If though. I could auction it? Oh, yeah. The human eBay.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude, the dad.
I'm Austin Rude, the son. And every week we watch movies and we talk about them.
Oh, wow. We're back to our old form of,
yeah,
forgetting. some. Wow. Oh, people are going to think this is a season one episode.
Well, you say one sentence and then I have to say two sentences. Oh. How unfair is that?
I'm sorry. Well, maybe you would like to rewrite the script then.
No, I'm too lazy. Oh, I'll just forget it every time.
God, the last thing we need is to change things up. You're already forgetting things we've done 38 times.
That's right. Is it 38 now? Wow.
This will be episode 39. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Clicking along.
We're
almost nearing the end of season two.
Yeah.
And then we got a short break coming up. Your summer vacation.
That's right.
And then we're already making plans for season three, tentative plans.
We have ideas.
More on that as they either come to fruition or we just say, this sounds like too much work.
We need to have like an event like E3
where we announce our big plans and then we inevitably miss the mark. And it's
we have the audience for that, right?
Super disappointing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. we have a worldwide audience.
Obviously.
Our episode on Tenet dropped at 1 a.m. our time this morning as we're recording this. Already getting feedback on it.
Actually?
From the other side of the... Yes, we have a listener in New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
Heather gave me some gave me some comments on our YouTube video this morning.
She must be translating that into English, right?
Yeah, I put subtitles on there. It curbs off all the R's.
And in case that joke didn't get it, I know New Zealanders speak English, okay?
Our American humor is a little tough for the rest of the world to get. It's a little too dry.
Yes. Too intelligent, you know?
That's really it. It's too stuffy.
Oh my
As
gosh.
You can tell from our American comedies like Family Guy and American Dad. Just
That's right.
Real highbrow stuff. Anyway.
So off track now.
Way off track.
This week, what have you been up to?
Doing a little bit of reading and just continuing my Simpsons Season 8 rewatch.
I what's so special about Season 8? You still didn't tell me, like...
It is Eric Berg from the Zing This podcast theorizes that Season 8 is like the pinnacle season of The Simpsons. And I'm maybe halfway through...
You're testing his theory, kind
of? We're taking a look at it okay. coming up here. And just looking at the episodes that are in that season... There are some heavy hitters.
Give me some examples.
The Hank Scorpio episode is in there. The episode where Poochie, the new character on Itchy and Scratchy that's voiced by Homer, the dog everyone hates. Homer's Vision Quest, where he eats the pepper and has the
hallucin- I like the farmer's market, yeah, and he sees the wolf and stuff.
The wolf voiced by Johnny Cash. I mean, it's stuff like that that are... You don't realize, all these really iconic episodes are in this season.
Is that the season with Lisa's goodbye with like her substitute teacher?
No, that's really early. That's season 2 episode.
That is my favorite episode.
With Mr. Bergstrom?
Yeah.
That's a great one with Dustin Hoffman as Mr. Bergstrom. Mm-hmm. But I watched the episode where Homer sees an alien, and then Mulder and Scully from the X-Files show up to investigate.
Oh, wow.
It. And it's just some of those things that stand out as like all-time great Simpsons episodes. A lot of them fall right in that season, and it really is just that sweet spot of... Where the Simpsons was really nailing it.
I need a list of just the best Simpsons episodes, because, like, I don't feel like watching 28 seasons
sure.
or whatever they're at now, but...
I mean...
I've seen a lot of it. I don't know what I have in
I'm sure there's, seen. Like, a top 50 episodes list by BuzzFeed or something like that, but, you
with
know...
With an ad between every item on the list.
Yeah, you could... Yeah, I get it. I don't want to go and rewatch everything. Because, I mean, even like Season 8, like not everything in that season is great. There's some that are just like, okay, it's fine.
Well, that's every TV show.
It's not that every episode nails it, but the there's some really iconic stuff in there.
That's
but
cool.
It's interesting to go and rewatch and sort of revisit some of these that I haven't seen in a long time. Like when Milhouse's parents get divorced.
That's something that stays for a long time.
Yes, it sticks. You know, then Kirk Van Houten is this like divorced, absolute sad sack loser for the rest of the Simpsons canon. But like, that's where... the foundation for that.
Is Ned Flanders' wife in there yet?
Or... Yep, she's not dead. Maude's not dead. But the episode where Flanders' house gets destroyed by a hurricane, that's in there. It's a weird season too, where there's like a lot of side character stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Fleshing out the town.
A little bit, yeah.
That's cool.
How about you? What have you been up to?
Same old. Let's see, Love, Death, and Robots is...
Season 2.
Season 2, yes.
Right.
That came out recently, and I've been watching that, and I'm disappointed. Like, severely disappointed.
Really?
The first season I thought was, like, pretty good. Like, the thing is, it's all individual things.
It's an anthology.
Created by different people. Right. Like, so you're going to have some you like, some you don't like, some that are just shock value, some that are basically just Call of Duty.
Right.
And so I liked, but they had like 18 or 20 episodes. And so you could kind of like watch and pick through. Yeah. And like, there are probably 5 or 6 that I think are like amazing. And then season 2 has 8 episodes. And I've watched them all now. And there's like a lot of really good animation, but most of the stories just aren't there.
Yeah.
They're focusing solely on animation and like graphics, making them look like realistic. And I don't care for it.
I didn't like that aspect of season 1. David and I reviewed it on BrokeBot when it first came out. And yeah, like it took this big sample size. It took like 20 something episodes to get the 4 or 5 that I thought were really good. And then like maybe half of what was left I thought was fine. And then half after that was just garbage that mm-hmm. That I hated, that I'm like, you're just trying to shock me with sex and crazy violence. And I'm not shocked by it. It's just dumb. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it really left me like season 2 came out and I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't care that much. Like the episode, if you were to tell me like, here's 2 episodes that are great that I think you would like, I would watch those 2, but I don't feel like investing my time in watching a whole season to try to get those couple
right
good people, because the stuff I liked in season 1 I really really liked. Mm-hmm. But
I would say Zima Blue's
great.
And there's 3 robots that's yep. from season 1 season and then 1. Season 2 I would really only recommend Tall Grass.
Okay.
It's like this cool story about a train like it stops and they don't know why it stopped, and then this guy wanders into tall grass, and there's not much story to it, but it's a fun,
okay,
interesting.
No, I'll watch that concept. One if you say that's the good one, you know, like that's yeah,
the best out of not great.
Yeah, I mean, if you liked a lot of the same ones from season 1 that I liked too.
Yeah, so. Zima Blue is best thing yeah. ever animated.
It really is very very good. Not just for that series, I think it's a really good animated short.
Right, it's a standout.
The other one I remember liking is like there's like this Russian army one. I think it's the last one of the season, maybe. And then there's like these giant bugs that are attacking it, or aliens or something.
Yeah, I kind of like that one.
I don't love the animation style, and it's not like amazing, but it's a kind of cool little war story.
Yeah, I'm not that much into like warfare, so right. I kind of right. just didn't vibe with it, but like I recognize it's a good story in there.
Yeah, I just remember liking it. I haven't seen it since, you know, it was pretty new, so.
Yeah, this season has pretty much like a Mandalorian type character in one episode. Like it's ridiculous.
Gotta cash in on that real quick, so
yeah
well, okay.
To each their own, I guess.
I think so. Somebody will. I think if you watch that, you will find something you like in there. It's just a question of investing the time to get through all the episodes to find that one or two that you like.
Right, and I'm thinking with like the shortened episodes. I know they have a season 3 coming out soon, so I think they just like broke up the amount of episodes so that they can like constantly be releasing content.
Okay.
But, like, I just don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Moving on.
You want to take us through what we're talking about today?
Yes. This week, we experienced Inside. After 5 years away from performing, Bo Burnham is back and better than ever. And a new Netflix special written, performed, and edited by him in lockdown in his bedroom. It's a mix of music, skits, and cinematic vignettes, all things we've come to expect from Bo. And that's about all that I can say to sum it up, because it is really weird and unlike anything I've ever seen.
I'll agree with that. I think it's kind of the best encapsulation of what Bo Burnham does. We talked about this. We did Eighth Grade.
Yes.
Bo Burnham and Christopher Nolan. These are our two repeats this season so far.
We love them both.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, last year it was we did two Soderbergh movies.
Right.
This season we've repeated two directors. So
it's interesting choices.
Yeah. Yeah. But like people who call Bo Burnham a stand-up, we talked about this on the Eighth Grade episode. I don't consider him a stand-up comedian. I consider him like a performance artist who a lot of his work is comedic.
Right. But I just don't know what else to call him.
I default to
stand-up, but it really isn't.
Yeah, he's not like a prop comic. He's not a guitar act. It's a very produced show. It's like a one man show with in the way that like a musical or a stage play is done.
He really is like a thespian
kind of. Yeah,
he just does his own thing.
And here he's doing it without an audience
and without a crew.
They're very produced bits. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that Bo Burnham is less of a comedian and more of a performer doing a produced stage show. And this isn't a stage show. He's doing it without an audience. But it is very produced bits that are choreographed to music. It's songs. It's edited comedy sketches. You know what I mean? Like, it's not comedy. And it falls a lot in line of what his big stage shows are. He's just doing it in this one room.
I think it's actually better that he's not like confined to the stage.
You like him better confined to a room?
No, I'm not saying never go outside. But like he can do things in this that he can't on stage. Like these editing tricks and like there's full music videos in here. He can't do that on stage.
Like the bit where he's doing the reaction video of his song.
Yes.
And then it keeps looping and going in like further and further back.
Reacting to his reaction video
to his song. That's just a genius comedy bit that it only works on TV.
Right. He has a few of those in his previous specials, like in Make Happy, he has this joke where he's like, people, something about continuity, and then it jump cuts from one camera to the other, and he's wearing a different shirt, and like it's never addressed. And I've always wondered, like, he has to tell like the audience he's performing in front of about that joke so they get it,
or he doesn't, but... or he's just speaking and doing two shows wearing two different shirts, you know, like,
yeah, that's possible.
I think a lot of those comedy performances are filmed over like multiple shows.
I hadn't thought about that.
So a lot of times it is like the thing of like, make sure you wear the same thing. But in this case, it's like, no, make sure you don't wear the same thing. And then we can get an extra joke in there. But
yeah, it's stuff like that. He can play more with the format of this.
Yeah. I think it's cool that he was, he seemed to, and I mean, there are producers listed here. He worked for Netflix. He had a post-production crew that I'm sure helped finish it up. He had like color correction and stuff like that to do and sound mix. But like creatively, you get the sense of like, oh, he was able to do whatever he wanted to. And that he did do it by himself. I love the little inner cut scenes of him like setting up lights, you know, knocking cameras over accidentally, like the little shots he would have just just kind of sprinkled throughout this special of him
making the special,
being his own crew, you know, experimenting with light and with sound and stuff like that.
I truly wonder, like, how much of that was, like, actually authentic and how much was him, like, putting on an act almost.
I think, like, I think there's more of an act in here than it appears to be.
He's so precise with everything he does. I really, like, I don't buy, like, there's a scene where he's just setting up equipment and then he, like, pulls the camera closer to him and it falls on the tripod. And, like, I don't buy it.
I don't know. I could kind of see that, but I could see it either way.
Like, I think my thing is, like, I could see him doing that on purpose.
Sure. No, I think there's definitely a lot of performance in this. And I'm not saying Bo Burnham didn't lose his mind a little bit, but I think there is some of it that is sort of dramatized to get the point of this is what isolation feels like.
Mm-hmm. It's a persona.
A little bit. And I don't know, because I kind of have a hard time believing that that you keep going and working this hard if you really are. And this, I don't mean to sound demeaning to anybody who has really dealt with, this year has seen so much, like, people reacting to isolation in different ways. Maybe he did dive in deeper.
Right.
But some of this stuff, I do think this is like a piece of performance art where some of what he was doing was maybe heightened a little bit. And I think he's a good enough performer to sell it. When he breaks down in front of the camera near the end, I legitimately didn't know if he was acting or if this was really a take where he started crying.
Are you okay? I wasn't sure, because there's that scene, and then there's also a scene where
there's one where he storms off.
Yeah, he's like trying to get through a sentence, and then, like, he just keeps staring.
They're right in the same area of the special, right?
He just knocks his equipment over and walks away. And
because you can see that, A, the year of isolation, B, we've all done projects where we are just, nothing's going right one day.
Right.
And you'll get insanely frustrated. But you can also see that, like, he could just be trying to portray the wheels coming off. Either way, it all works. Like, it's emotional to watch him. I'm not sitting here saying I was watching it, like, totally skeptical. Like, I don't buy this bull. It was gut-wrenching to watch him just start crying in front of the camera in the middle of doing a take.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, like, that's the pain that so many people are feeling this year.
And then there's, like, quiet moments. My all-time favorite, I don't know if it's my favorite, but, like, he does a scene where he starts talking about how he wanted to finish this special before his 30th birthday.
And there's
a clock right next to him, and he goes, I turn 30 in a minute. Yeah. And, like, he's like, we're just going to sit here and wait and get back
and
to work.
And he just watches the clock. Yeah.
And it's so weird.
I like it. I like that he's not afraid to put a quiet moment in something. I think movies in general are super afraid of, like, quiet moments now.
Did you feel uncomfortable in that moment? Like, I did.
No, I felt not uncomfortable, but you feel, like, the tension.
The dread?
Not the dread so much. You just feel the tension in watching the clock. And I just liked the pause. I liked that there was a moment in there where we're all focused on one thing. And also we're not being like bombarded with content. Or here's 100 jokes. Or here's a bunch of stuff to process. It was just, let's all sit here and watch this clock. And then the clock ticks over, and then, like, a song starts. Like, immediately. Like,
yeah.
I'm going back to work now. And it just was like this, I don't know. I think it's a brilliant, tiny moment of calm in the middle of just a sea of content that he put out there. Because when his sketches are going in his songs, there's like 100 jokes. They're just flying at you constantly.
It's a lot.
It's intense. It's intense comedy.
It's kind of like a breakneck pace. Yeah. Like, you just keep going.
In the same way, we talked about this the other night. Movies like Airplane or The Naked Gun or Top Secret. Like, the reason everybody loves those movies is because it's just jokes on top of jokes. Some of them are physical. Some of them are word jokes. Some of them are puns. Some of them are just silliness. And they're just so many of them. And it's all just piled on top of each other. And it's a nonstop thing. Right. And this is the same thing. It's a different kind of humor. But like his songs, because you're listening to the music. And also, like, I'm always like marvel, like, there are comedy songs, and this is like this super well-produced comedy song.
Right.
And it's just got so many jokes in it.
And then, like, music videos. Like, yeah. He has a song called White Woman's Instagram.
That is so funny.
And he's just, like, setting up all of these poses with, like, him with flowers over his eyes.
It is the absolute best.
It's really great.
I laughed through that whole thing because it's like, oh, I see a million of these Instagram accounts a day. It's so funny.
I want to talk about kind of the different moods that are here because it goes through a lot of them. Like there's that which is like silly, and there's another one.
There's the phone sex, like the sexting.
Yeah. There's one, I forget what it's called, but he's, like, repenting about, like, this Aladdin costume he wore when he was 17.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. Like, he's like, I didn't paint my skin brown or anything.
But it still felt weird.
And then in the next verse of the song, he's apologizing for trying to rationalize wearing the Aladdin costume.
It's like he keeps trying to continue, but going back to it.
And everything is happening almost in real time, and he's apologizing for something he did 30 seconds early. I think that was a great, I'm sorry I interrupted
you. You're agreeing with me, so please keep going. But like then there's the, I don't know what to call them, like the kind of in-between songs where it's like this has a message to it, mm-hmm. but it's also fun.
Right.
Like, I forget what it's called. The one with Socko, the politically aware puppet.
The sock puppet. Or it's not even a sock puppet. It's just a sock.
It's a sock on his hand. Yeah.
That one I liked conceptually. That one didn't execute as well. But it was still silly. I did feel like the entire tone of everything got progressively darker. Like the further into the year that he shot this, the darker the tone got.
I think so, because I think this whole thing is kind of like a man's spiral into,
oh, for sure,
madness.
Like his beard is getting crazier and crazier,
which I love. Like his new look, I hope he keeps it.
Well, he doesn't, because then at the end he comes back. He comes back for his last song. Hasn't he cleaned up at that point?
It's possible last song, and like he starts it off as like, I think it's meant to be before that.
Oh, is that the flash, like a flashback?
Yeah,
to...
it's like, because he starts off, this is my first take, and then it like,
oh, okay.
Transitions into him with the beard and long hair playing it.
So
it goes from the first take to like the final cut.
All right, I flipped that around in my head. I thought it was like he got to this point and then he goes, okay, enough, and you know, shaved his beard.
But again, I could also believe that he shaved it to film earlier scenes.
I mean, it's all.
Don't trust anything in the making of section of this. Almost.
No, I think I want to. Just believe he was intentionally trying to show something, you know, and whether or not he was showing a flashback or whatever, you're right. The bulk of this is about him losing his grip in the year of isolation. And the mm-hmm. tone of his stuff does get darker and darker to the point where he has one song where he's playing guitar and singing. And that's not even a comedy song, really. That's just like a folk song, kind of.
Yeah, that's funny feeling.
Yeah, it's just sort of like a point where he just sings kind of a pleasant folk song, mm-hmm. you know?
It's very melancholy if you listen to the lyrics, though. I think one of my favorite quotes in this whole thing, and there's a lot of them, but he says something like, 20,000 years of this, 7 more to go. And like, what is it? The internet at your fingertips, the ocean at your door. Themes of like the world's ending, but
we're distracted with, which is a running theme through the whole thing. Of like, you know, oh, all hail Jeff Bezos. He keeps cutting in with these stupid Jeff Bezos songs about how, like, he's our savior and he's the greatest and all of these things.
The second time that happened, I was so confused because it's just, like, 30 seconds of him singing about Jeff Bezos. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, on to the next thing.
And his early songs about, like, kind of like white savior complexes. And like you can kind of tell like what was going on in the world. This is especially what I like about this is it's the special as a whole is topical. A lot of people were locked down. A lot of people felt really isolated and on edge mentally in the last year.
Right.
He also talks about income inequality here. He talks about, you know, like white savior complex. You can tell like the George Floyd stuff was going on, but he never mentions George Floyd. He never mentions COVID. He never mentions Dr. Fauci. He doesn't talk about vaccinations. He's not talking about any specifics. He's just talking about the overall, and maybe he does mention COVID. I'm not going to say he never mentions
any. No, I don't think he does.
The whole thing is, we're locked down in our houses. The world is going to shit. And we're all just looking for distractions.
Right.
To keep from actually having to deal with it. When he sings about like white saviors and how it's like, oh, it's time for, you know, what should I do? And people are like, just be quiet and listen. He's like, well, I don't really like that. Uh-huh. You know, like, and how like income inequality, and they're like, well, do you want to give up some of your wealth? He's like, no, not really. And like,
yeah,
like,
he even says like, do I want to give away some of my money? No.
And it's just sort of like the realities of everybody gets to go on social media and talk this big game, but when it comes to doing something, you know, when and people suggest, well, here's what you can do, they not really, I don't, you know, and I just, that's his theme here without talking about specifics. It's in the White Lady's Instagram song about, there's a lyric in there about a quote from Lord of the Rings that I've attributed to Martin Luther King.
Yes.
You know, these social justice, rich white ladies who care about things, but aren't knowledgeable about any of them. And that's not to call out women. It's white men. It's virtue signaling as a whole. And I love this special. I think will ultimately be kind of timeless. The lockdown is the most specific thing. But it's not a special that's, I expected songs about coronavirus and things like that. And it's like, no, it's none of those things.
I'm really glad he didn't go that
way. I am too. I it was super refreshing to see comedy that wasn't, hey, how about that vaccination, huh? You know, right. like this kind of shit that's come out of in podcast form. And
he kind of boils it down to like, I don't know, like, because like when you get to the specifics, you forget about like this issue exists like as a whole. Like,
yeah.
you can talk about income inequality, in terms of, like, Jeff Bezos has a lot of money, but then you're forgetting, like, all of the other billionaires that also right. have a lot of money.
Like, and just the general idea of, like, this is a problem. Let's not talk about the one specific example that made us all talk about this for 15 minutes.
Right.
Like, it's just the thing of, like, this problem exists. Like, whether, you know, it's like everybody wants to talk about violence in the ranks of police and racism in terms of policing people. But we only want to talk about that when a black person is murdered by a cop.
Right. Like, and then people forget.
And then it fades and we wait until it happens again. It's like school shootings. It's like everything refreshes that, but then it there's no follow through until it happens again. Then we have to start all over. And he's just kind of not calling these specifics out and just throwing the issue out there without any prompting from a specific incident, like saying, yes, income inequality. Let's make fun of Jeff Bezos because didn't we all flock to Amazon this year and make him a trillionaire and pretend like he isn't problematic in a million freaking ways. You know what I mean?
I mean, he even starts off the special, like, the first song, he's talking about, like, I don't have the answers, like, I'm not going to solve all of your problems right. with comedy. I'm just telling jokes and working on something to distract myself
yeah.
and to hopefully distract you.
Yeah, there's a lyric in his first song that's like, here's some content. Like,
yeah.
like it's just sort of like, I can't fix anything, here's your content. And then talking about, you know, here's some jokes. Like, mm-hmm. if you wake up and your house is on fire,
call me up and I'll
tell you a joke. And it's just sort of like, yeah, comedy doesn't really fix anything. Like, yeah. it just makes you feel better.
But he's still going to make... But he says something like, am I still going to make money off of this? Yeah. But anyway.
right. I mean, it's a really interesting look at this... It takes a really unique person to be able to say, I'm going to talk about income inequality, even though I'm a rich guy. And I'm also going to make fun of myself and also make fun of other rich guys. And I'm not going to fix the problem at all. And you're going to come away from here happy that I did this, even though I've done nothing. Like, there.
I mean, he's honest about it.
That's what I'm saying. It's a really honest look where he's like, yes, at the end of this, I'm rich and I'm getting richer and you're not. And I recognize that's a problem and I'm doing nothing to fix.
And also,
I'm not vilifying him for right. that, by the way.
And also, a comedy special isn't where you go to fix the world. Like,
no,
he could still be donating to charity. He could still be doing stuff. I don't know what he does with his money. I mean, he lives in, like, a one-bedroom house, so...
well, according to this special, anyway.
Fair enough.
I don't know where... No, I mean, yeah, he did shoot it. I don't believe he spent a year in that room. You know what I mean? I think that's where he shot his special.
Maybe it's his work studio?
I don't know. He could have a room in his house. It could be his pool house. I have no idea.
Right.
But, I mean, it's an interesting concept... either way, because I think part of what worked for me was feeling the claustrophobia of that room. Like,
you get sick of it after
a while. You get to feel how closed in. And I know this is not a revelation to a lot of people. I don't want to sound like I'm unaware of this. I spent the last year going to work, and that carried its own anxieties with it. And I'm not comparing one to the other. So I don't know what it's like to be cooped up in the house for a year. I know a lot of people who were, and I know a lot of people who had a lot of mental stress on themselves. So I want to recommend this to a lot of those people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who weren't, because I gelled with this. I understood where it was coming from. I think this will give people who weren't cooped up in the house last year an understanding of what it was like to be. And I think people who were cooped up in the house will feel seen, will feel not alone. Now, this does come with a trigger warning. Maybe that's too much for you. But if you can watch this, I really want to recommend that you watch this and let yourself feel things, because this is comedy, but it was surprisingly like gut punching.
It's depressing.
A little bit. It's sad and it's claustrophobic and it's emotional in a lot of parts.
My thing with Bo Burnham is that, like, and maybe it's because I'm like kind of pessimistic, but I don't like pandering, and I don't like...
Same.
Everything's gonna be okay, because sometimes it's not. But if you're just gonna be, like, honest about it, like, hey, things suck, but also I'm gonna make it funny, and you're gonna forget it sucks for a little bit. Or, like...
Right.
It gives you both emotions.
It's a... Like we said, he's not trying to fix anything.
Right.
You can acknowledge that things suck without saying the world is lost and this is all hopeless. You know what I mean?
Right.
When he talks about why he walked away 5 years ago.
I wanted to talk about that. That's so...
Go then. You have things prepared about it. I was just bringing it up as for me, that was like a insanely honest thing for him to come out with.
It is. Okay, so to understand this, you gotta, like, kind of understand his last special. 5 years ago, he produced a show called Make Happy.
Right.
And in the end of the show, he has this 10-minute song that's modeled off after Kanye's, like, Yeezus tour.
Uh-huh.
It's random, but, like, he just rap talks about his problems. And it starts off, like, him making silly jokes. But then halfway...
Is that the thing he does with the Pringles can?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he keeps talking about...
You gotta let the chips go at the bottom.
Yeah, because my hand's too big to fit inside the Pringles can. But then halfway through, he, like, just gets honest and he's like, I don't know how to please you. I want to please you, but I want to stay true to myself. And then, like, the end chorus is like, you can tell them anything. If you make it funny, make it rhyme. And if they still don't understand, repeat it one more time. And then he just goes back into the silly stuff and forgets the depressing stuff.
Right.
And then he leaves. And I've watched interviews where he talks about he had, like, severe panic attacks on stage. And so the end of this show, he talks about that. He does this song called Hands Up, where it's kind of like this motivational song that plays on, like, an audience being there that isn't like he even has like
he's like a laugh
cheering
track.
Which
is very funny because he does it at a couple points in this where, like, at the very beginning, like his first song, he tells a joke and then he hits a button, like you see him hit the button and there's like laughing
canned,
like,
laughter.
It's a funny little tool, and it's also like a little sad.
It's a joke, but also it plays with your emotions. Like, it makes you feel like there's a reason laugh tracks exist.
Right. It makes you feel like you're supposed to laugh.
Right.
And it also, I think, there's another level of you feel how much he needs an audience to where he has to have a laugh track in his house. You know what I mean? So there's, like, a sadness to it, too.
It is sad, yeah.
Yeah.
In this song, Hands Up, he's, like, encouraging, like, it's a pump-up song. Like, get ready. This is the finale. And then he does this rap. And it's, like, the lighting for that song is, like, copied from Make Happy.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a sequel to that.
Seen it, but not enough to have picked up on. I've seen that end part of Make Happy.
Right. And so he tells the story of how he took a 5-year break, and at the beginning of 2020, he was ready to start performing again. Yeah. And then quarantine happened and his anxiety got worse, and now he's back in there. And then the song changes And he's still saying, like, get your hands up. But then he also throws in lines like, pray for me. It kind of turns into, like, your cheering is what I need right now. And
It
changes the meaning of the song.
You say you like him because you're pessimistic and you kind of feel like he is too. I think he has a lot of pessimism, but I think Bo Burnham is an optimist. I think he is a hopeful guy. He didn't walk away from stand-up or live performance 5 years ago and go into like Howard Hughes mode where he just shut down and didn't come out and didn't do it. He worked. And he made a movie, which is also very optimistic. Eighth Grade is like we talked about. Eighth Grade is incredibly optimistic. It's about looking forward with acceptance and hope, with all this positive stuff. Maybe it's not like a bright and sunny outlook, but my first high school experience was horrible and traumatic. Well, that's it. No, it's about looking forward and loving your future self and accepting your present self. And that's
right.
That's as hopeful as it gets.
It's just realism,
yes,
like mixed in, because it's not. There's a thing I like to call like toxic positivity, where people like
right.
You bring up a problem and they're like, no, that's not a problem.
You're in denial
be happy.
Of it. Right. Yes. But I don't think that's the same thing as being an optimist.
Right.
I think you can be an optimist and be real. Not only did he make a movie, but he talks about it in the special, like he was working on his panic attacks. He was working on his anxiety and getting better.
Yeah.
You know, like he didn't just throw in the towel and go, okay, I'm an anxious person. I can't ever perform again. Mm-hmm. He wanted to perform, and I think he wants to connect with audiences again in a live and meaningful way to him. And that comes across in all of that. So as dark as some of this stuff gets, you know, the idea of pray for me, of cheer for me, is sort of like, let's hope we can get on the other side of this and, you know, I can come perform for you live. You know, like, mm-hmm. I feel like there is a lot of that in that, as dark as this special is, there, he just peppers the personal optimism in there.
Right. I agree with that. I don't know how to transition. So moving on.
Let's just do it.
the way he does with jump cuts.
Jump cut. Smash cut to the next thing.
So I wanted to talk about there's these weird, like, let's go into analyzing mode, because there are a few scenes in here where it's like really kind of like you can interpret it a lot of ways. The ending is one, but I'm going to save that. I wanted to talk about there's a anti-suicide PSA.
I'm glad you're bringing this up. Yes.
So he starts off, I can't remember, but he, in one song, he jokes about suicide. And then immediately the next scene is him sitting in a chair talking to the audience. Like this, like, I'm the hip youth pastor kind of guy. and he's like, don't kill yourself, man.
Come on, man. Really?
And he says something like, if I could kill myself for a year,
for like a year.
I would.
Yeah.
But alas.
But yeah.
We shouldn't be like dead. And then halfway through the PSA, it cuts to the PSA is now on a projector screen, finishing the rest of the video. But it's projected onto Bo Burnham, who is looking bored and looking at his phone and not really paying attention to the PSA. And like, I feel like there's multiple ways to interpret it, but I see it as like, he felt obligated to put a message in there. Like kind of like people would criticize him if he didn't say like suicide is a bad thing while he's talking about all this mental illness stuff. But then he's also, like, critiquing PSAs and, like, that's not actually how you engage with someone and that's not how you get your message across.
I think he, I don't think he was worried about what people would say, because I think if he was worried about that, he wouldn't have even broached the topic of suicide. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I think if, and that's a reason I think that, another reason I think he was left alone to do what he wanted to, because I don't think any modern producer would be like, yeah, let's keep that in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it struck me at the very beginning, you know, like the content warnings come up and it was like language and suicide. And I was like, I've never seen that as a warning. Like,
I didn't even pay attention to that.
Yeah. But it was, and I don't think he was making light of suicide. I don't make light of suicide. I know people who have lost people to suicide. I think it's a very serious thing. I think it was actually kind of responsible to talk about it and kind of genius in the way that he did. He brought it up because people have those thoughts. And right. It's stupid. I don't like the idea that we pretend it doesn't exist. If we don't talk about it, then we're not putting the idea in people's heads. It's like, that idea goes into people's heads, whether you bring it up or not. And,
right.
And by not acknowledging it, I don't think it's helpful at all.
There's no peer pressure here. It's just a thing that exists and people know about it.
Right.
And I think there's a line in there where he says, like, don't kill yourself because people love you. And then he goes, that's not true, necessarily.
That's not necessarily true.
And
it's funny.
But then he says, and people could love you in the future. And that's the point. Is
right.
Like,
right.
That's a very true message when people are like, think about your loved ones. Well, that's going to push people in the wrong direction sometimes. So, like, think about the future.
Think of a brighter future, because right. What you're feeling now isn't necessarily. Yeah, there's a... there's a comedian named Bobby Gaylor who did a spoken word piece years ago, and it was really controversial, and it was called Suicide. And it was like all of this, you're thinking about suicide. Well, why don't you go ahead and do it? Because here's everything that you get out of. Here's everything you don't have to experience anymore. And he starts listing all the, like, these crappy things, like, oh, you won't have to wait in line at the bank, and you won't have to, you know, go to the store hoping to get some food and some guy got the last one. And slowly over the course of this list, it transitions to
like positive things.
Like, you're not going to experience like a first kiss with somebody. You're not going to own a puppy. And yeah, you know, I don't remember them all, but it shifts.
Wow.
Really gradually into, like, it's all a list of things you will be leaving behind. But it starts as, like, crappy things that are really just inconveniences and moves into, you know, these experiences that we all experience. Your first apartment, your first, you know, breaking away from your parents and living your own life and doing, you know, and just sort of like, and it's this really kind of uplifting and positive thing. It, not just about, like, don't kill yourself. It's like, life is full of shitty things. It's also full of amazing things that have no price tag, that aren't a physical thing. It's an experience that you have that everybody has. You know, transition, you know, having children, having, you know,
right.
Getting married. These things. And I love these takes on suicide, instead of just going and going, come on guys, I know I made a joke about suicide, but seriously, it's very serious, you can't do it, you know, like,
yeah.
And doing this sort of pandering thing instead of wrapping it in this sort of clever way of saying, I get it, you're sad, it feels terrible, it's not always going to feel terrible, and telling that in a way that somebody can digest and understand, mm-hmm. and see down the road.
It's really kind of truthful.
I think, exactly. It is being truthful with somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe somebody doesn't love you today, but somebody can love you tomorrow. You know, like...
Exactly.
And I think Burnham did that really, really well here. And I think in talking about his panic attacks, and also when he first brings up, like, this special, he goes, I have to work on something to keep from putting a bullet in my fucking brain. Maybe he's joking. Maybe he's not. You know, this whole thing just comes off as unflinchingly honest and a guy trying to work through his problems in a really tough time for the world.
It's so interesting. Like, that's all I can...
It really is. I didn't want to talk about this. I was like, I almost vetoed it at the 11th hour, just saying, like, this isn't a narrative movie. I don't want to talk about a comedy special.
Is that after you'd already seen
it? No, before I'd seen it. Okay. And then I sat down and watched it. I'm like, oh, no, this is like a themed piece of art. Like, this is...
Yes.
It's not a narrative. It's not a movie. I wouldn't call this a movie.
After I sat down and watched it, I was like just doing laundry and you were like, how is this special? And I was like, he's a genius. And you laughed at me like...
Well, because you're a Bo Burnham fanboy too.
I know. It's hard to take fans' opinions, like, they're not going to critique something sometimes that is from someone they love. But like, I really think this is a masterpiece.
I agree with you, because I don't love everything in it. It has sketches that didn't work for me. But they are still on theme with the message that he is trying to convey, in the same way that a filmmaker is trying, you know, a film is a series of scenes that are trying to convey a message.
Right.
And this is the same thing. They're just vignettes as opposed to being totally connected.
Can I ask what didn't work for you? Because, like, I had a few myself, but...
I think the one that stands out the most is, like, the video game. The like, life simulator where...
He's live streaming himself.
The live stream stuff was the funniest part of that. And I realized it wasn't supposed to be, like, a hilarious... there was an interesting mix of, like, the funny stuff about, like, all the cliche things that video game streamers say.
Yeah.
Against, like, the sadness of this guy who can't leave the room. But overall, that just... It was, like, a SNL sketch that's, like, oh, that's a... The core of that is a good idea, but it just goes on a couple minutes too long.
Right.
And the Sacco stuff, I think it was funny. But... Just in comparison to some of the better stuff, it fell a little flat. It didn't hold up in terms of, it wasn't the funniest piece. It wasn't the most clever or the smartest piece. It was just kind of there. It was just kind of a filler piece for me.
Okay.
It was a clever concept to just like, I'm crazy and I'm using my socket to talk to.
Right.
But like, yeah, that was about it for me. But and some other things that just were a little weird, but they don't stand out enough for me to pick them out. I need to watch this again, and I'm sure I'm going to in the near future.
There were things, I've watched this 3 times now, so that gives you an idea of who I am as a person. But there were things that I didn't like on the first time that, like, by now I don't think there's anything in here I don't like.
That's cool.
The one White Girl Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like, I thought it was a catchy song, but I was like, okay, this is just, like, there's no meaning here. But then I actually found...
It's in there. And that one really stood out to me.
Because he's listing all of these, like, bogus Instagram posts, but then, like, halfway through, there's, like, this really meaningful, like, verse about, like, hey, mom, I miss you. This memorial post for the mom. And then it goes back to just, like, bullshit. And to me, I just read that as, this is really weird. But, like, I actually found the song on YouTube and I kept listening to it. Because I was like, what is the point of that verse where she's talking to her mom? And I think it's that, like, on social media, there's, like, 1 in a million posts that are actually, like, important and about something and
yeah, but I also took that as are you posting that for your grief, or are you posting that as a play for sympathy? And I don't know the answer. I think some people do it legitimately as a way to exercise their grief, and I think some people do it for the likes. And I think in that way, it falls right in line with, you know, all the other BS that is listed in that song. It's just a big chunk because it is always like the biggest, most epic Instagram post.
The,
you know what I mean?
50-page
Sure. I'm not caption. I'm not even trying to judge that because I've posted personal things like that too, and I don't know that I don't do it for the likes too. I mean, for
We all judge people on social media use, sure. But then we all use
a lot
social
of us
media.
Do the same thing. And there's a artist named Jersey Droz that I've followed for a long time, and on one of his shows, he talked about like how artists are very like, oh, it's not very good, it's not very good. But we always are posting our work online. And it's like, at a certain point, you have to acknowledge that there's a certain amount of, hey, look at me.
Fishing for compliments.
Right. The reason we post things online is it's a, hey, look at me, no matter what it is. It's,
right.
You know,
otherwise, it would be in your sketchbook for
right.
you to look at.
Right. You would do it for you and you alone. But
and there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. No. It's in excess,
no.
I think.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of what the commentary of this whole special is like you said, the world's at our fingertips, but the ocean's at our door. You know, like, we're ignoring the problems of the world. Because of the excess of social media. Yeah. This is where we're living our lives now.
There's one like actual stand-up bit in this where he makes a joke. He's like, one should only interact with the real world like a coal mine that you go into and get things you need to post on the real better social media real world.
Right. You run down, you get dressed, you run out there, you get what you need, you come back, you put it online. Yeah.
Yeah. While we're on the topic, welcome to the internet. That's one of the songs in here, and it's amazing, I think. He kind of talks about how the internet, like, it's everything all at the same time. Like, here's a tip for draining pasta. Here's a 9-year-old who died.
Right. Right. Yes. Like, yes.
Just
I
like,
now. Yeah.
Here's someone sending you nudes. Here's people posting racial slurs. Here's,
you can go and be a social justice warrior, or you can go be a racist, you know, in the same place. It's, I wanted to talk to you about that because we've had, some of these conversations, recently, where I think, and this is where I always sound like the old man in the room who's like, oh, this damn internet. I'm not cursing the internet. And I'm not denying that ADHD, depression, and anxiety are legitimate, like, chemical imbalance mental illnesses or mental disorders.
Right.
But I think that the internet has so much sensory overload that it can, maybe it's not ADHD proper or anxiety proper, but it causes a lot of the same symptoms. Mm-hmm. It can cause you to feel the same way.
And it makes those conditions worse.
Yes. If you're prone to it, I think the reason anxiety is at an all-time high is because, you know, if you look at it on the rise of the internet has probably coincided with that. Mm-hmm. And I know we're reporting things better now and researching things better. But it just is like, yeah, the idea that the song being that the internet is everything all the time is exactly that's what it hit me. It came back to that for me was like, yes, it's too much. Mm-hmm. And I know I hit points where I just put my phone down for a day. And
I had to delete the TikTok app off my phone. Yeah. I still have my account. I don't use it much. But, like, I had to delete it because I was getting upset over ridiculous things and commenting just angrily.
Because you think it's real. And right. It's everything all the time, and it all has the same amount of validity in this space. And you take it all as very real and very anger-inducing or happiness-inducing.
When you're getting upset over mass shootings and people's opinions on Doctor Who at the same level,
yes.
There's an issue
there.
That's
the song. That's the song. That's a great example.
But there's a level to the song because it's not just that. It's not just Bo Burnham singing. He's playing the character of this, like, skeezy businessman.
Right.
It's kind of like a musical theater song, and he's manipulating you with the internet.
He's like the guy who's selling the internet to you.
Yeah, like he says, your mommy let you play on her iPad when she was two, and it did everything we designed it to do.
Yep.
Like, there's all these things, and then it ends on, like, the most amazing evil laugh ever.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's like a take on the Steve Jobs interview when the iPad came out. And some reporter asked Steve Jobs, like, what do your kids think? And he goes, oh, we don't let our kids use this. And it was like, oh, that's everything we need to know about this thing right here.
That really tells you if you believe in a product.
It really does. They're like, oh, don't be silly. No children should have this. I mean, yours should. Not mine, though.
Yeah, because like, that's how I pay for things for my
children. But I wanted to talk just real quick about the idea of art and suffering.
Yes.
This special portrays I made this art because I suffered. And this is an ongoing conversation. Can you be funny without being damaged? Can you be artistic without having been through some traumatic experience? And I believe you can be a creative genius while having a good balanced life. Mm-hmm. And I do worry a little bit about I know there are legions of young artists who are almost wanting to be damaged and traumatized because they think that's their key into making great art.
It's a very real
thing. It is a very real thing. And I just want to do my own PSA and say that is not necessary. This is a portrayal of somebody making something that they are living, and it happens to be a great piece of performance art. I don't think it's necessary to be damaged to make something this brilliant.
With that, I feel like the misconception there is someone who's been through a lot and has trauma, when they make a meaningful piece of art about that trauma, there's a passion there. It's kind of like a vent piece.
Sure.
And so people think, okay, trauma equals passion equals art. And it's like, no, passion can come from a lot of things.
It comes from a lot of places.
And when you're young, like, oftentimes you're not going to... It's hard to find passion sometimes. Like, you can have an idea.
Right.
I struggled with this as a writer. Like, I would have ideas that I enjoyed, but, like, I didn't have the passion when it came to writing them. And so it's just
or the life experience a lot of times.
I mean, that's true, too.
And the downsides that you're looking for, I think a lot of times just the ups and downs of life will provide enough shitty times for you to have something to write about, to create about, you know, like,
right.
And it just is like, it is a very interesting portrayal, and I don't want to PSA this too much and be like, don't worry, kids, you don't have to lock yourself in a room, but it is just sort of like, it's an interesting correlation, and I feel like it makes an argument for something that I don't necessarily believe to be true, but I don't really feel like he was trying to make that argument, that this is where it all comes from.
To me, I see this more as, like, distract yourself by making art.
Kind of, yeah. Like, he's turning that anxiety into creative fuel.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people do.
It's a good way to alleviate that stress.
And I would guess that Bo Burnham, I think you see this, you do see this in a lot of, like, really successful creative people. I would guess Bo Burnham is a workaholic. I would bet he has a hard time sitting still.
Probably.
The amount of specials, high production, like comedy shows that he produced in a really short time. He really only did comedy for like 10 years.
He did three stage productions that toured around the world, and then a movie, and then this.
Yeah.
All before he was 30.
Before he was 30. He called it out at one point here, and he said, in the last 14 years, and I'm like, holy shit, that's right. He started when he was like 16.
On YouTube, yeah.
Right. So it is just like, you get a sense that like, oh, he's locked in his house. He's not going to just sit there and do nothing. Like,
right.
He's going to produce something.
And I want to talk about what could be next for Bo Burnham, because I have no clue. I really just don't know. He ends this special with him going outside. Well, kind of.
Yes.
There's this scene.
It's a stage, yeah.
Yes. He's in the room that he's been in the whole time, just sitting in a chair looking depressed. And then this wave of light, this line of light comes on him, and he turns around, and the door is open. And he carefully, like, pushes it open. He goes outside, and we hear, like, birds chirping. And then as he closes the door and looks around, it's a spotlight, and we hear the right. audience clapping. Yeah. And he tries to go back in, and it's locked.
He's locked out. Right.
And then, if that's not enough for you, it turns into a projection on the wall inside to imply that, like, he never really left. He's still inside the room. He's watching the special inside the room, and then he smiles, and it's
over. I think it implies more of he doesn't know what's next, and I think that scares him.
Okay.
Going outside is going into the future, and... You know, it's right. wide open. What, you know, part of it is like, I hate this room. I've been trapped in it. Also, it's safe in here.
Right.
You know.
And in that possible ending song, which comes right before that, he says something like, I'm done singing, but I'm still inside.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, maybe he'll make another stage production. Maybe he'll make another video production like this, maybe not in lockdown, but just in general, or another movie or acting. I really don't know. He could do anything.
I would say Bo Burnham can probably do whatever he wants to do. And I don't know if that's good or bad for him. I don't know if he is going to try and amp himself up to doing live performances again. Which I gotta be honest with you, I think if Bo Burnham had come to like Tampa or Miami, I'd have been like, okay, whatever. If he were to come in the next year to Tampa or Miami, I think you and I would go. I think I would be like, after watching this, I'm like, it's not that I wasn't sold on how smart and brilliant he is. This hooked me more than eighth grade did. This really got a hook in me, and I'm just sort of like, this is a whole different level of genius than I've ever seen from him before.
His act has matured too. Like, I don't want to call his previous specials childish, because they're not. But like, there is a certain level of...
There's just more substance here.
Yeah.
It's funny takes on serious things, and as opposed to just orchestrated silliness, which is what I would call most of his other stuff. It's mm-hmm. not bad. It's just like, it's just comedy songs and sort of...
And edgy songs. It's him smart. Trying to push the envelope.
That's where I think I've always had a little struggle with him, is when he was young, he was trying to... be edgy in the way that young people are. And I'm just sort of like, he's a kid trying to navigate an adult comedy world, you know?
Right.
And I think he's really grown into a mature performer in that way.
I think so too. But, like, I would love to see him tour, but I would rather him never tour again if it means, like, better for him.
Oh, like, for sure.
Like, I know it's so complicated, like, because he acknowledges his relationship with the fans and how he's like, I want to make you guys happy, but I want to make me happy.
Right.
And sometimes that's not the same thing.
It's so much, I mean, again, that same kind of, like, conversation about, like, oh, would we have Van Gogh's work if he wasn't crazy? Aren't we better for him having been insane? And it just is sort of like, I get it. I do get it. It's weird and we don't know for sure. But you have to realize, like, he's a person. Like, mm-hmm. he's not your monkey to make dance. You know, he's not
an AI producing these works right. of art.
Like, this is a person, and you have to put people first, which is essentially part of what he's. I wonder if that experience is part of what comes into the production of this, of, like, you know, people first, as opposed, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like the idea of, like, I'm a comedian. Don't put so much importance on me. I'm just a comedian. Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm not going to fix anything.
I'm not going to fix anything. I'm not the answer to the real problems of the world. And all, you know, like, the other angle of that is, like, I'm just a comedian. Stop dehumanizing me to be like this machine that mm-hmm. that just entertains you at your beck and call.
He has. See, now I'm going to, like, bring in stuff that isn't part of this special. But he has a song called Art is Dead. And this is from, like, his first special that's not even filmed.
Okay.
And he's performed it on, like, the show The Green Room and stuff like that. But it's essentially this song talking about how selfish comedians are. And he's like, I could have fed a family for 40 fortnights. A family of four for 40 fucking fortnights. But instead, I wanted my name in lights. And he compares, he's like, do you want to know what a comedian is? Think of children at a birthday party who's screaming because not everything's about him. It's that, but yeah. You grew up. It's like, he has serious songs even back yeah. then. And, like, just, I think his take on, like, the art form is so interesting.
I love that. And I find that really refreshing. When people ask me why I don't like Joe Rogan, it's less about Rogan's stupid politics and his selfish beliefs about the world, and more about, like, he's one of this school of comedian who's like, we're the last truth tellers as comedians, and we're these important people in society, and just really taking, you know, making dick jokes as this First Amendment warrior, you know, we are carrying society forward.
If you have to preach your self-importance,
right,
that's a huge red flag.
And it's why he runs a podcast where he sits and talks for 4 hours at a clip, because he just really, there's this self-importance wrapped up in that I find just incredibly insufferable.
Oh, I know. Podcasters expressing their opinions. I know. Yes. So... There's a
little bit of... I just... Rogan in particular, you're a comedian. You hosted a show where you dared people to eat bugs. Stop pretending that you are, you know, some bastion of high art that is going to save the world with your freaking comedy. And I use comedy loosely. I don't like Joe Rogan.
That's the point
but,
of that.
But to hear another comedian come out and just be like, no, I'm a comedian. I'm not here to save the world. I think that's super refreshing against this other school of people who take themselves too seriously.
Agreed. I feel like we could talk about this for hours because there's just so much content here.
There is a surprising amount to pull apart in this thing.
So, I wanted to see if we could both like pick out what our favorite song is. I have a list here, so if you don't have them all, but I thought that was how we could close out today, because why not?
Yeah, let's see. Why don't you go first, and I'll, I think White Girl on Instagram, stands out to me as, like, the funniest, probably. But that, yeah, Hands Up is, like, that's a good end song. FaceTime with my mom.
That one was just kind of silly.
That's where it started with, the more comedic stuff is at the beginning. I would probably have to watch it all again. Is there a soundtrack album to this?
It's no. There's like two official YouTube ones. Like he posted Welcome to the Internet and Netflix posted FaceTime with my mom.
Okay.
And then the rest are just kind of people's recordings that are being taken down.
Yeah. Dang, because I would buy the soundtrack.
I would buy the album.
I'm waiting for Bo Burnham. We talk about what's next. If he put out an album of like not comedy songs, I wouldn't be terribly surprised, and I'd probably buy it.
Or like a visual album, like you know how Beyonce did like a with series Lemonade. Of videos? Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah, I could see him totally doing something like that. I would say right now, probably White Girl Instagram.
Solid pick
because it struck me as funny and also sort of taking a shot at social media, like also kind of saying something without being too heavy, but also like really funny. And the video for it, like where he's got all the words
the bullying campaign where people wrote things on their head.
I thought that was a really solid piece. But if I watched the special again, like Funny Feeling, I think is just a good song.
It's so good.
It's a really like kind of sad, emotional folk song. And that one has stuck in my head. So, they're very, very different songs, but I would put those two at the top. That's the most memorable, for sure.
White Girl Instagram also has the benefit of, like, I feel like he had a lot of fun making that. Oh, like, it just looks like fun with all of the shots he created. My favorite was probably one we haven't talked about yet, and it's called Stuck in My Room. It's this, like, minute, 30-second song. He literally records it just sitting on his floor. Like, it's not one of the produced stage things. But, like, he just talks about being stuck in a room trying to be funny. And then he compares it to his childhood where he was stuck in his room trying to make it fun.
Right.
And then there's this line about, like, you came out of your room to look for something to hide again. Looks like you found it. Welcome back to your room. And I don't know, that song, and I was in lockdown for 6 to 9 months.
You were here a long time.
Like that really struck a chord with me in a way that I wasn't prepared for. I had to, like, my first watch of this, I like paused it and went back and listened to the song again. Like I was not ready to let it go. I was like, that's too short.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point that the song that resonates with you, it might depend really heavily on what your lockdown experience was.
And who you are as a person.
And who you are, for sure. In general. Yeah. What's the song that he did the reaction video to? Is that on that list? Because it's only like this little 20-second thing.
No, I didn't put it on the list, but it's like something about getting coffee. Like he explains in the reaction video, he's like, there's a lot of songs about work songs from like the 1920s. It's about modern day exploitation.
It's about the unpaid intern.
Unpaid intern. Yeah, that's it. That's the name.
It's like, how is this legal?
And,
and then that was probably the best straight up piece of comedy was the reaction.
That was really good.
It was great. Yeah, let's pull the plug on this before we just keep going.
Before we reenact the whole thing.
I think it's safe to say big recommend for both of us.
Anyone and everyone.
I think this is really not just a comedy special. I legitimately think this is a piece of art. And it's really caught me by surprise. I can't recommend this enough.
Very much.
Cool. Let's close that out and move on. We got some shout outs this week besides our very enthusiastic recommendation for Bo Burnham's Inside. What do we got, Austin?
That's right. We're giving you a lot to watch. I'm shouting out The Anthropocene Reviewed, which if you know all of our shout outs, that might sound familiar.
That has been here before.
But this is not the same thing. So John Green started a podcast where he reviews things pertaining to humanity. And he has released a book called The Anthropocene Reviewed. It's the same thing, but it's not like a script book like you might find from Night Vale. It is new reviews for the book, but it's also sort of a memoir because he's reviewing things that are important to his life. Things okay. like root beer, his favorite drink, and his brother, and all of this stuff. And there is a animated video of the first chapter being read aloud by him. And so that is what I'm shouting out today.
And it's animated what's that thing? StoryCorps kind of style? Or is it like a full, like, feature-length cartoon?
No, it's StoryCorps. It's like one line making the whole thing, and then the line weaves in and out as he talks. It's really interesting, and that first chapter is really explaining the book, like, explaining why he wrote it, and how the podcast started, and, like, five-star reviews, and why that's even a thing. It's a really interesting thing, and it's also new for John Green because he is known for, like, teen romances, teen stories, but this is his
Isn't
first...
there always, like, a dying kid in his...
Not
his
always.
I think it's always.
But moving on, this is his first nonfiction adult sort of work.
Okay.
And it's really poetic. So, check it out.
Good deal.
What do you have?
I have a way that you can pay for dick jokes. I have the Movers Ultimate Indiegogo. My cousin and future guest, Ben Rude, has written and directed his second movie, and it is a comedy called Movers Ultimate. I have seen a rough cut of it. It is very funny. It's a comedy about a crew of movers, you know, going through their day, trying to figure out...
Like a workplace comedy?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a couple characters at, you know, the crossroads and trying to figure out their lives and just, you know, a bunch of comedy of errors as they try to move this difficult customer out of their house. It's very funny. It has been shot... And some of the post-production still needs to be paid for. So they are doing their last push to get them over the finish line to hopefully get the movie released this fall.
That's awesome.
So they are running an Indiegogo. And if they have different levels, you know, it's essentially a pre-order of the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's you get something for your money. And it helps a small independent filmmaker... Ben lives in Ohio and makes movies on a very tight budget, and he makes good movies on a budget, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you like to support indie artists and see the films and work that comes out of that, please give this a look and throw Ben a couple bucks. It'll be really helping a project just just a few feet to go over the finish line. This is their last push. And it would mean a lot to this project.
That's incredible. And it kind of reminds me of, like, this. We just watched kind of an indie production.
Totally.
But, like, Bo Burnham has so much money. Like,
sure.
Not everyone is as fortunate. So, like...
But we also, I want to step back because I did want to talk about this. You see, like, some of the, we talked about this while we were watching yesterday. He has a song where he's singing, and as a drum beat happens, there's like a flash of light. And about halfway through the song, I realized he has his flashlight on his iPhone making that light, and he just holds it against his thigh until that drum beat comes up, and then he turns his phone out and it lights up the back of the room and it backlights it.
Right. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that indie filmmakers, indie artists do. These things that are low cost, real simple, and they work. And, you know, it is the same kind of thing where he produced this himself and he had to figure out ways to do this without a crew that he could do as he was performing. And it's the same kind of thing. Yeah, the budgets are different, for sure.
It's really cool, but, like, how you got to be creative about things.
Limitations breed creativity. But back to Movers Ultimate, I'm super proud of Ben for carving out a niche for himself in the indie film landscape, which is super tough to do. It is so hard to make a movie, and he really strives to make it on a really tight budget, and Movers Ultimate looks great. It does not look like a cheap movie, and if he can get this last push over the line, it'll just bring the whole thing home, and I'm so excited for him. So if you can help out, it would be super appreciated. And we're going to have Ben on to talk about Movers Ultimate later on this year. As it's rolling out, I want him to do some promo for it here.
Now I want to watch it.
We'll give it a look.
Steal that rough cut from you?
I do. I have a link to it.
And, I'll support that Indiegogo too.
I'm throwing a few bucks at it and, really want to see Ben bring that movie home.
Cause that's the thing with Indiegogo. Like, if everyone throws in a few bucks, like,
for sure,
you don't have to put $50 a month or something crazy.
And it's not like Kickstarter is like, if you don't hit your goal, you don't get any of the money. You get whatever you raise on Indiegogo.
That's good.
So, and it's pre-orders for the movie, which gets it seen more. So it's all good stuff. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility. It helps us grow the show.
That's right. And another way to help us grow is to tell a friend. It might be a little hard if you're stuck in a room, but scream as loud as you can about our podcast, and maybe an annoyed neighbor will check it out.
That would be great.
Yeah. What's next week?
Next week, I am going to take it back about almost 30 years now. We are going to watch a very early Quentin Tarantino screenplay directed by Tony Scott. It is True Romance. Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette, they have a suitcase full of cocaine and they are driving to California to sell it.
Is this because you talked to me about this while we were gardening?
I talked to you about it because I saw that it just landed on HBO Max. I haven't seen this movie in a long time. I love this movie. It's got a great cast in it.
All right.
Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Brad Pitt's in it, Michael Rapaport. Let's see, who else? James Gandolfini is in it, Christopher Walken, Dennis Hopper. Val Kilmer plays the ghost of Elvis. This movie...
I recognize, like, two of those names.
You will recognize people as you watch this movie. You go, okay. Oh, that guy, yeah. this movie is Tony Scott directed, and he's highly stylized. The screenplay is by Tarantino, also highly stylized. This movie is bananas, and it's so much fun. And I can't wait to show it to you.
All right. Well, that's quite the pitch.
It's fun. I love this movie, and I hope it's held up. I have not seen it in quite a while, but I watch this movie really regularly for a long time. So, it'll be cool. We'll and you're see. Not you're not a Tarantino guy, so this will be kind of a good sort of introduction to Tarantino because he didn't direct it, but he wrote it. So it's sort of like a baby step into that.
Like I can see what's his voice and what's his.
Sure, yeah.
Visual look.
Yeah, yeah, it's very distinct.
All right.
So that's next week. Austin, what's your social media?
I don't do social
media. Oh, yeah, we've learned something this week. No more social media.
No, I'm a hypocrite. I am on... I am austin.n.rude on TikTok and Twitter. And I'm also the... Old Who Review on Twitter.
On Twitter. I am philrude.com, and from there you can get my social media handles. You can see a post for each of our episodes, and you can buy art from our episodes. Don't forget, this is on YouTube. My channel is The Rude Warrior on YouTube. You can also get there from my website. And... for all but the first, what, 5 or 6 episodes, there is a video component to this show. I feel like I don't shout it out enough on here.
Right, the speed drawings.
You can listen to it as you watch me draw the episode art for it's a picture for inspired by this movie. Each movie that we watch. I should it's write cool. this out so I can actually explain it succinctly. But yeah, that is on YouTube if you want. And the art is for sale on my website. So that's philrude.com.
Awesome.
Austin, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We did everything. Just like Bo Burnham.
Just like we are like Bo Burnham.
Just they're not as clever.
Just or rich.
Well, I've been holding out on you, but.
I knew it. I'm working on that beard. There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.
Go watch Inside.
The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? You're soon to be. If not already, favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest, hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.